informal hearing on case number PU08742, Otter Tail Corporation's Renewable Resource Cost Recovery Rider, 2009, and the tariff filing for that. With me today is my fellow commissioner, Kevin Kramer, and by phone, Commissioner Tony Clark is participating in this informal hearing. We also have commission staff who are present. We have Tom Rafferty. We have Annette Bendish. We have Mike Diller. Am I missing anyone? Jerry. Oh, and then we also have Daryl Nitschke and Jerry Lean, who are also sitting in on this informal hearing today. Before we go to Otter Tail to identify the participants that Ed has today for the hearing, I'll go to Commissioner Kramer and then to Commissioner Clark to see if they have any opening comments.
Good afternoon, welcome.
Commissioner Clark.
Just good afternoon and welcome. Thank you.
All right, and now we'll go to Otter Tail and have you identify for the record the people participating in the hearing.
Is blue on or off?
It is. It's
on. Blue is on.
Harvey McMahon with Otter Tail.
Harley?
Harvey.
Mm-hmm. Harvey, thank you.
And I am the manager of Renewable Resources Construction and Operation.
Bruce Gerhardson, Associate General Counsel.
Bernadine Brutlog, Manager of Regulatory Services for Otter Tail.
Brian Draxton, Manager of Resource Planning.
And Randy Sinstelin, Manager of Renewable Energy Development.
Okay. Good enough. Now, generally, when the commission has an informal hearing like this, we ask the applicant to describe for us the what you are seeking. In this particular case, maybe we'll go first and discuss the procedural issues in this case about the large industrial users, and I understand there may be another person who's requested a hearing in this case. And so if you can fill us in on those matters, Mike.
Yes, so there's a large industrial group that has expressed an interest in pursuing this matter in the rate case. And as far as I know, I think we received an email message from Bruce and large industrial group that that everyone's in agreement that we will look at the wind farm in the rate case. Mm-hmm. And I don't, from a staff perspective, I think that I've arrived at desiring to have it in base rates as opposed to a separate rider or in the fuel clause adjustment. Initially, as you may remember, in the first Langdon Wind Farm, I was opposed to that because of we were flowing through the tax incentives as they came in, which meant that there was a huge drop in revenue requirements each year, and didn't really want to solidify that in rate base if we were going to lose $500,000 in revenue requirements each year. But as you'll learn from Bernadine this afternoon, they've come up with a smoothing effect so that there isn't that dramatic change from year to year. And because of that, and I'm not opposed to looking at including those wind farms in rate base.
Is there one of the people who represents the large industrial users here today?
This is Larry Shadeen and myself. I'm the expert witness that appeared during the last proceeding we had with a large industrial group. I'm an electrical engineer, and I testified in North Dakota. And then we also have Jake Hendricks on the line, who is representing Rich Savico, the attorney who filed the request.
All right, thank you. And then do we have anyone else on the line who is interested in this case that has not already been identified by the parties as a participant in this hearing? Are either the people sitting in today connected in any way with this Otter Tail case? I know David Cedarquist is with NSP for the next case, but what about the other gentleman who's
Carol, sitting in? Carol, is your interest in this case?
Just strictly from one of the ratepayers in Otter Tail District, just interested in the wind power.
Okay. And your name for the record?
Carol Duane.
Carol Duane, and you're from where, Carol?
Wilton.
Wilton, North Dakota. Okay, welcome. We're glad that you're here. Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. Anything else on procedurally that we should go over before we start this informal hearing? Has there actually been a request for a hearing in this matter? I want to ask first legal that question.
I had a verbal request.
Yes, and can you tell us what that verbal request was and who made that request?
I don't have
this is Tom Rafferty speaking.
Mm-hmm. I can go run and get that.
That would be helpful. Mm-hmm.
Well, Mr. Rafferty's doing that. Would it be okay if I also describe a bit of, maybe just clarify a little bit of the agreement between the large industrial group and Otter Tail with respect to process?
Yes, that would be very helpful.
The agreement is that, number one, we would both be in agreement that the rider rate, should the adjustment that was proposed to go into effect on January 1st, would go into effect on January 1st as proposed. The case would be tracked. The case would continue on, however, for the purpose of examining the issues that were raised in the interveners or the large industrial group's comments. And they would be dual-tracked in the sense that we would have combined hearings. I want to just be clear. I don't think it's our understanding that we would combine the two cases, that would be combining the two hearings. We've done that, I know, for instance, with separate cases for the Big Stone 2 proceeding when we had MDU and Otter Tail tracking two separate cases. So that would be how I would understand our agreement to be. Mr. Diller said, it's always been, I think, anticipated that one of the questions when we got to our rate case was, what do you do with these investments that are in the rider? Do you bring them into base? And there was a fair amount of discussion on this when we were here talking about Langdon. So those two cases can belong together very well, I think. And it may be that the commission in the end decides that let's leave them in the rider. Maybe there's some reasons, like Mike had mentioned, about how accelerated depreciation and tax credits work for whatever reason. Or it may be that the commission decides in the end to move them into the base rates as had been contemplated in different settings. I don't think that issue needs to be addressed today. It didn't need to be addressed when we were here for Langdon. I don't think it needs to be addressed today. That can be discussed at that time. So that's how we anticipate this going forward. We think it appropriate to have the two separate cases in the event the commission determines that they should remain in rider. Then you'd, in a sense, approve the rider on a going forward basis with those in that. So that's why maybe the procedural difference of having a combined hearing process, but a and there is some efficiency with that. Dual track, but
there is the question that wasn't present when we were considering the Langdon case, because you hadn't filed a rate case yet at that time. And now you filed a rate case and you've asked for interim rates. So there is another way we would have of you have the interim rate recovery in a rate case if this was folded into the rate case. You would have an ability to recover interim rates on this. In fact, I think it's a little confusing for people. They don't know quite whether you are recovering interim rates from this already or whether you're not, just because of the interim rates with the rate case. And then, so there was some, I had a question about double dipping because you're already getting interim rate recovery. So that is very confusing and to the public.
If I may.
And I also need a little help with it myself as a commissioner of why you wouldn't want to just, if your issue is that you wouldn't have any recovery during this period until the rate case is decided, why you didn't choose to file this with the rate case and then just recover it through interim rates?
Well, there are a few reasons. One is, first and foremost, I think that the way the rider was conceived and the very purpose of the rider was to not create a disincentive to enter into PPA or purchase power agreements in order to secure the wind energy that our IRP had identified. We'll talk about that a little bit in a moment. And so the idea was that we needed no disincentive or no obstacles to entering into what was lower cost wind resources. If we had an obstacle, what would occur would be we would avoid the risk and go with the PPA.
Sure.
And that would be to the detriment of ratepayers. And Ms. Brutlog will describe that a bit in a moment. If we move this to an assumption of base rate treatment at the moment and put the there is, when you do an interim rate treatment, there is an uncertainty that is built into the notion of an interim rate as opposed to a rider. That will change the whole purpose behind the rider. I believe our folks will feel that the investments that they made with the assumption that the rider would continue, that the circumstances would have changed. The regulatory compact, if I will have changed. So I think it's very important to our management that we are allowed to have the assumption that the rider will serve this purpose, continue to serve this purpose. The rider that's in effect, actually, if you go to the rider, it's actually a formula rate. The rider itself anticipates that as you bring in investments, they are automatically folded in. There was an assumption as we brought this forward that we would do that on an annual basis. But nevertheless, the rider works much like a fuel clause works as a formula rate. And so our belief is that the appropriate treatment for these up until the rate case is that we treat them under the rider. And that's the agreement that we reached with the large industrial group. There's another reason, and that is that like fuel and purchase power costs, the electrons that are related to these and the costs that we're recovering through the rider are flowing through the fuel clause. I believe, and Ms. Brutlog will explain that. They are currently in real time flowing through the fuel clause. So it's our belief that current and real time cost recovery should track the same way, and that we just feel that those things sort of intertwine and make these more like fuel clause, where they're not interim rates. For that reason, in fact, we'll talk about the interrelationship with that. The interrelationship really is between these investments, these costs, the rider, and the fuel clause. That's the real relationship. And for that reason, we don't want to create confusion with customers. These are supposed to mimic fuel and purchase power costs, which would go through the fuel clause, which would not be subject to an interim rate treatment. For those reasons, that's why we're requesting that this be taken under the rider up until a decision is made, and then on a going forward basis, you could make the change if that is your decision at that time.
All right, now I have a question to ask for staff. Is the MDU owns a wind farm in
Montana.
And they have not brought that to the commission, but is that because Montana is using all of that power?
I don't.
You know, they built that wind farm.
I don't know what the reason is.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Well, that wind farm is directly attributable to Montana's, you know, portfolio standard.
Mm-hmm.
So, maybe they're collecting it over there 100%. I don't know.
I don't know either. I was just curious about that, because does NSP own any wind farms? Do they own the ones in, I should know this with the rate case anyway, but I know they're planning to own a wind farm. They're planning to own the one in South Central North Dakota, and they're planning to own the one in Minnesota, but at the present time, otherwise, are they?
Other than Grand Meadow, I don't think so.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Okay, and so, all right, I think we're all familiar with the concepts here. Now we want to get back to Tom Rafferty. And
just to follow up on Bruce's point, now, just since we have another party, I mean, Larry and Jake, is that your understanding as well of the agreement, is what the way Mr. Gerritsen described it?
Well, I think, yes, with a couple exceptions here. First of all, we want to make sure all parts of the rider are on the table as we move into this rate case. That's number one. And number two, we were agreed that the amount of the rider would be different from an interim rate, in that it would not be subject to refund. In other words, at the end of it all, the interim rates and the rate case would be subject to refund, but the rider would be changed going prospectively. That was the nature of our agreement. But we didn't talk about the merits of having a combined case versus two cases running concurrently. I think that's pretty much up to the commission.
Now, and the other issue that I'm concerned about here is we have staff who is in an advocacy role for the commission. We have, we have advisors as well. Now, if, quote, any settlement has to be entered into by all parties agreed to by the commission. This cannot, I mean, and you can't just, or if it is, there's just then a settlement between two parties has to be brought to the commission of what you've agreed on here. And then we have the final determination of whether we accept that settlement or not.
Certainly, and the only thing we've agreed on so far is to try to delay this so that because of the suddenness and everyone being very concerned, all of our members, that we wanted some way to have this held over for hearing so we could all put in and not agree on what the final outcome. Right now, it's just an agreement on how to go forward.
Well, then, it sounds to me, though, that there's more substantive issues than process issues that have been determined here. Let's see if I can think of a substantive issue that's been determined here.
Well, the tricky part is we aren't going to try the rate case, and that's the risk we run if we, you know.
Alana.
I'm having trouble understanding exactly what you're contemplating. I understand what you want in the rider. I understand what you want with advanced determination of prudence, but are you saying that conceivably in the rate case, this investment could be disallowed? Or are you assuming that because the rider's going forward now, it could never be disallowed? We might mess around a little bit with where we stick it and do we put it in base rates or do we put it in the fuel adjustment and blah, blah, blah. I mean, what's the company's concept here, and what are the other parties' concept for that question?
Well, the industrial and interveners want a chance to make sure that the investment was prudent and that the accounting that was in the rate case that was also prudent, and we haven't had a chance. That filing, a lot of it was done in secret. We haven't had a chance to look at it, so whether the amount of the capital investment that's at question or the way the taxes are being recovered or whatever, we'd like to be able to challenge those decisions.
So in your mind, all issues, all standard rate issues would be on the table?
Exactly.
Okay. Whether or not the rider goes forward at this time?
That's right.
Okay, I have one more question for the people on the phone. Are you planning to intervene in this case and or the rate case formally?
We're putting together an intervention coalition right now to intervene in the rate case the same way we intervened in the fuel cost case in 2007.
Okay.
The same cast of actors.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So you're talking about that for the rider case as well, though? This current case right that we're talking about today and the rate case, or just the rate case?
Well, given that they're combined some way.
Yeah, they aren't yet.
Well, given that they would be, our intervention group would participate in both.
Okay. And I'm just trying to flesh out the basic parameters. If the commission chose not to combine the two cases, because they are not combined today, would you want an opportunity to intervene in this current rider case?
I think the answer is yes.
Okay. I'm just finding a lot of reasons here to not rush.
Mm-hmm.
It's just that it makes our intervention a lot more complicated.
I understand.
It's hard to explain this all to our industrial members as it is. But.
Right.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Thanks.
Do we have, when, Alana, you mentioned this morning, then I'll give Mr. Gerhardsen a chance to respond. Okay. Alana, just while you're up at the, you had mentioned that when you read through, we've all been reading through these materials, that there was something about the date of January 1st that caught your eye. You had said that there was in there, filing, something about if the commission did not get this done by January 1st, what the option would be.
Yeah, I think they contemplated that it might not happen. I don't have the exact language. It's back in my file.
I have. Here's the original filing.
Yeah, I would have to look for it, though. Mm-hmm. Maybe you know, right, Bruce, right where it is?
I don't know that I know right where it is, but I do know, and I will affirm, that it was in our filing that we had requested an implementation mm-hmm. date beginning January 1, but that we had agreed in our filing that we would not implement prior to commission action.
Mm-hmm. And you just total up, true up, or whatever the right word is.
Well, if I may, there is a reason to not delay. And the reason is that, and as Ms. Brutlog will describe, again, kilowatt hours flow through the fuel clause. They are treated as energy received for our customers at zero cost. So what happens is what we would do is we would be giving electricity to customers at zero cost until we can implement. And the problem is what actually occurs under the rider is this then swells in a tracker account. And all you're doing is you're delaying recovery and causing a larger recovery later.
If you're allowed to have a rider to begin with. If you're putting it in a rate case, you're getting it when those rates take effect.
Well, we have a rider today.
I understand that.
My understanding is that that's how the rider was contemplated, how it was conceived in order to not disincentivize us to make the wind investments, which were beneficial to our customers. And we'll get to our presentation and explain how that works. And
that is the fundamental reasoning for doing this.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And in the end, what I think just we'll get to this in the presentation too, is that this results in lower costs to customers.
Is there a way to separate out the capital costs from just the energy costs in this matter in any way? You know, generally in a rate case, that's why we do it, because there's, you know, the recovery of the capital costs. We know that you'd be purchasing energy through the fuel clause adjustment. Is there any way that we can... is there any way, a part of separating those two matters and dealing with them in, because we know through the fuel clause adjustment we deal with energy costs.
Right. The way that the rider works, again, what we're trying to do is say
capture
that...
Capture both, don't you, in the rider?
Well, in terms of wind, it really, when you go out to... when we're out deciding how to supply the wind resources that our IRP has identified are cost-effective for our ratepayers. Again, we have a PPA option. We have an option to invest in wind. If we do a PPA, all of the costs flow through the fuel clause adjustment. There are no separation of capital or energy, capacity or energy charges. When we came to you and asked about the rider, the idea was to not disincentivize us from entering into cost-effective investments in lieu of less cost-effective PPAs. That's what we've done. We've been very successful at it, and I think our folks will tell you about that. What we will feel, I think, is that there will have been a bit of a switch in the Commission's view if that basic fundamental premise is changed now. We made those investments with the rider in place, with the understanding that we would recover the costs on an energy basis, just like the fuel clause, and that these things would be reviewed in the upcoming rate case, but up until that time, that this is how we would recover. Is there a way to do what you're asking? I think that's an issue for the rate case. I think Mr. Shadeen has expressed an interest in looking at that issue. I think he's entitled to look at that issue, and I think that will be an interesting discussion in the rate case. But for the meanwhile, it seems to me the rider works as it is intended, and that was it removed an obstacle to us pursuing the most economical option to supply this energy to our customers. And I just don't want that to be missed. And maybe we should go through our presentation and then get to questions, because some of these things are answered better by us laying out how this works.
All right, Alana Jeffco-Sacco first.
One quick comment, and I don't disagree with what you're saying. The problem is that we didn't do, when the concept was before the commission, the incentive or the lack of disincentive, we did not do the customer notice. We did not do the individual notice, or we probably would have had the industrial group on the phone then and been hashing out some of their concerns and possibly some other customer concerns. So, you know, we could say if we had to that decision is flawed because we didn't have that notice, that we have to reconsider that kind of decision. I'm not saying this, but it could be argued because we didn't have that individual customer notice when we did that. That's the one you did later when the rates were going to, you know, hi, your rates are going up tomorrow kind of a notice, which is not what the rule requires. So that's the problem, and part of what I'm trying to do is let's get that taken care of once and for all now so we don't have a continuation of mistakes on the concept. Okay?
Well,
we can't forget either of those points, I think.
We believe that the current proceeding allows for that examination. It also allows for us to continue with what's, I think, very important to North Dakota ratepayers, and that is that our energy from these units, which is cost-effective, continue to flow to them to their benefit. And what I don't want to do is in any way call that into question. That will not help anyone.
I just
want to make sure that the basic fundamental premise is here. This is the most cost-effective way to supply the energy that was demonstrated as needed. And what we don't want to do is call that into question. If it is examined, it should be examined as we've agreed on a going-forward basis at the time of the rate case on a combined basis. I was thinking that tracked in two separate cases made sense. I think the issues are probably separate, whether they're in a combined case or separate cases. But nevertheless, I think the basic fundamental premise of the rider recoveries is that they are to mimic or replicate the fuel clause type recovery that would occur if we entered into a purchase power agreement. If that changes, many of the fundamental assumptions that we've been operating under, and would be very detrimental, I think. And in the end, it would have a chilling effect on companies like ours taking the kinds of risks we've taken in order to accomplish what we've accomplished over the last several months. I mean, I just really want to stress that this has been, and in fact, I listened to the Langdon proceedings in preparation for this hearing, and that was, I thought, appreciated by many of the commissioners at the time of those proceedings, is that the company has taken risks.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely right. And obviously that's what you're going to argue here in a little bit. Forgive me if I was thinking about something else, and there's a good chance I was when you were talking, trying to work through this. But back to Alana's question, though, what do you contemplate going forward that this rider, should it be, approved, how binding is that going forward? I guess I'm not sure I heard that.
Does that
answer
mean that any time that you would build and own a wind farm, that it would be somewhat automatically folded into that? Well, or would we be hearing them on a case-by-case basis and nothing would be binding on from one case to the next?
Absolutely. What we have contemplated, and while it's a formula rate, we have made very clear that our expectation is by September 1st every year, and I think that was an internal deadline, maybe not an ordered deadline, but that we would make an application that would make a request for implementation as of January 1st of that year for an adjustment to the rider, and that it would come to you just as this has, that has been our intention. And that with respect to the prudence of, let's say, Ashtabula, which is, I think, the pending prudence determination now, and we have agreed with Mr. Salvakul and Mr. Shadeen that they can examine that issue. But let's assume that, I think it's highly unlikely myself, but let's assume that they were to overcome their burden in this case, because there is a statutory presumption of prudence for these projects, is let's assume they were to overcome that and decide that in the end this is not for them. The difficulty is, during the time you're proceeding, the electricity from that project is flowing through the fuel clause, and there's no good way to undo that. So let's assume you made that determination at that time. We'd say, okay, what we'll do is we'll take out the costs. Going forward, you pay no costs for this project, and, of course, the electricity would go with it. We would then have to decide how do we either sell the project, dispose of the electricity in some other market. But the two need to go together, and because the electricity comes on a real time, there's no way to hold that in abeyance. And that's why we have this rider. It's meant to accommodate that.
Something of that concept. Okay, now what I'm interested in is there any way that the commission has to do this particular thing on an interim basis? It sounds like that's the... that there would be a, let's say, even if the commission chose to do this and move ahead with this PU08742, it would only be in effect for the period until the immediate rate case mm-hmm. before us is decided. The cases then, we would only do something on an interim basis. But there was a question this morning about whether the commission's able to do anything on an interim basis. You haven't filed on this one for an interim rate increase. You've asked for a rate increase with this renewable resource cost recovery rider. We already have, let's just get this question answered. Are you already recovering for these? Have you already, in your present rate case that you filed with the commission, is there any recovery for either the Ashtabula or the Langdon Wind Farm included in that interim rate?
No.
Okay, that's all. I mean, that's an important thing to have on the record so that everybody understands it, at least at this informal hearing. Okay.
Nor are you preparing to argue for it in the rate case, I guess.
It was our proposal that they stay outside. There are pluses and minuses to each. We can understand that reasonable minds might differ what's preferable.
Absolutely.
It's just like, for example, we had NSP file their rate case, but they kept their energy efficiency rider that they wanted outside the rate case as well. The commission came to the end of that, and we weren't too happy about that, I can just tell you. Okay, so somehow we need to bring these things closer in together more quickly than we did on that particular issue as we move forward on this.
If I may, I think Mr. Diller might even reflect on, I think he's had a turn of change of heart on what's preferable here. I don't, what I think, if I remember what was said in the original proceeding on this, is that Commissioner Kramer said that, you know, come rate case, all bets are off.
That's why when we talk about interim decisions, I always figure every decision is interim until the next decision.
Well, and with respect to that, I think, Commissioner Weirfall, I'm assuming what you're saying is, can we do this on an interim basis in the general sense of the word? There's a way that that word could be used to mean as an interim rate as defined in your rules. It is on an interim basis. That means this will only be in effect until a decision is made concurrent with either the rate case decision or as a combined decision with the rate case. That's the only recovery we get.
Well, I suppose we could put something about that in any order that we did, saying that this would be reviewed again in the rate case. It's going to be da-da-da-da. We could put that in whatever order, if we chose to move ahead with this, that it would definitely be considered as an issue in the rate case or whatever.
I think that's in your order on the Langdon project. I think that something to that effect is in that order, if I recall correctly.
Okay, why don't you take a look at that, Mike, and see if that's in there.
But whether it is or it isn't, it can be, or it can be implied by just virtue of the fact that every now and then we have rate cases. You know, I don't know. But
well, and we knew that this rate case was going to be filed this fall.
I understand the proximity of the juxtaposition does matter. I agree.
Mm-hmm. I thought it was
in the order section.
If it's not in the order, it was certainly implied in the discussion.
Of course, the commission can always put that in any.
The one thing that would change is if there's a determination on prudence. And as we've agreed with the industrial group, you will not be making a final determination on prudence as you make a decision to implement the rider beginning January 1. That will not be a determination that you're making at this time. That will be made as part of the concurrent proceedings.
Well, we would need to have a response also, as this is all filed, from advocacy staff on any of those proposals, comments from them on how that, whether that's a good idea or not, so that they're as a party who's already a part of the case, and whether they agree with that concept or not. So,
as far as the last order, it's not in the order section, but right before it says the rider will be updated annually or until such time that the Langdon Wind Farm is included in base rates to reflect changes in costs due to depreciation, federal production tax credit, North Dakota investment tax credits, operating costs, and so on.
Okay, so that's not quite the same. It's not quite the same.
Well, in that order,
pretty good, pretty strong.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, in that order, you deemed the Langdon Wind Farm prudent. So presumably.
I understand that. No. I understand that. And then we did the prudency for that one. And we said, but until but cost, it would be, and that left it open as to whether we would include it in base rates in this next rate case or not.
Yeah. The rider would continue until it's included in base rates. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. Well, I think that today an informal hearing is always just that. It's an opportunity for the commission to get some information on the record about facts in the case, and then we use that as we see fit, whether we determine we need additional hearings or whether we can move ahead given the facts that we already have in the record with the informal hearing. So with that being said, I think we're ready for Otter Tail to share with us some factual information about the this information on this renewable resource cost recovery rider.
Do you want me to quickly tell you about the one caller?
Oh, yes, I do. I'm sorry, Tom. His
name was John Bame, and he's from Fingal, North Dakota. And I think what he's asking for, I don't think he wants to cross-examine witnesses and some things like that effect. I think he just wants a chance to go to a meeting, talk to the company people, talk to the commission, voice his concerns, find out what this is about. He has a hard time understanding if this is going to save him money, why does it show up as an extra charge on his bill? He uses 3,500 kilowatt hours a month to heat his home, so it's going to cost him more than the 380 that was put in that letter. It'll be more like, I don't know, 15
five
bucks,
times that or something.
20 bucks for
mm-hmm,
him.
Mm-hmm.
So that was the one, and he did say he would like a hearing. So whatever that significance that has, and that was on Monday.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you.
I'll begin then.
I think we have today until about, I want to just make sure we have the admin meeting at 3 o'clock. And we still have to go through the NSP proposed settlement. But we could do that after 3 o'clock. So I would say we have until 10 minutes to 3 today to get some information on the record.
We'll do our best.
Okay.
Brewer Dean Brutlog, who you know, will provide you with a bit more detailed factual information on our Ashtabula project and the 2009 rider adjustment that we've requested. Before she does that, I'd like to make just a few basic comments on the fundamentals of what Otter Tail's Ashtabula and the Langdon Wind Investments and the rider have accomplished. You might recall from our discussion on Langdon and in other cases, Otter Tail performs detailed integrated resource planning to determine a resource mix that will result in the least cost approach to meeting its customers' needs. The current integrated resource plan determined that Otter Tail should pursue 160 megawatts of wind resources. That's for system-wide in all of our states, as part of that least cost plan. This wind generation that we're talking about today was not the only, this 160 megawatts of wind resources was not the only resource identified in that plan. The plan also includes the addition of baseload generation, for which Otter Tail has been pursuing its share of Big Stone 2, as you're aware, and also other resources such as additional peaking units at different periods of time. These other resources aren't part of this proceeding, but I mention them just to stress the importance that this wind generation is part of our least cost integrated resource plan, a part of our resource mix, if you will, and that it should be considered in that context. In pursuing our options to fulfill the need identified for wind generation, Otter Tail identified that there was an opportunity to reduce customer bills by owning wind projects rather than entering into purchase power agreements with third-party energy producers. The problem with this approach historically was that the regulatory framework that we had been working under unintentionally encouraged utilities to enter into PPAs, or purchase power agreements, with third parties, despite the fact that some utility-owned projects could be brought in at lower cost. And that's because the cost of PPA purchases and market purchases, too, automatically flow through our fuel clause adjustments to customers, but project investments without the rider would not. Therefore, Otter Tail began investigating ways to eliminate this disincentive for cost-effective wind projects.
Mr. Gerhardsen, I think the commission's familiar with that because okay. that's from the last case. If we can get into some of the more substantive issues that relate, like you said, to the relationship with the fuel clause adjustment.
I just have a few seconds, and then Ms. Brutlog will go. Now, you might ask, how can increasing the rider rate have the effect of reducing customer bills? And I think this is the prime issue. For that explanation, listen to Ms. Brutlog's presentation. You'll hear that while all the costs of wind projects are included in the rider, all the energy produced from the projects, all the kilowatt hours or megawatt hours, are put into the fuel clause calculation at zero. They show up as zero cost. And for every unit of energy, every kilowatt hour or megawatt hour that Otter Tail can put into its fuel clause adjustment at $0, it reduces the energy required to be included in the fuel clause adjustment from market purchases or PPA purchases. The costs of those market purchases or PPAs would be included in the FCA and therefore reflected on customer bills. This is how the rider works to reduce customer bills relative to what would occur without it. With that, I'll turn it over to Ms. Brutlog to move through some of these factual material.
Thank you. Go ahead, Bernadine Brutlog.
Good afternoon, President Wiefeld, commissioners. Again, I'm Bernadine Brutlog, Manager of Regulatory Services at Otter Tail Power Company. And as you heard during the introductions here today, to answer your questions are several of Otter Tail's staff that have to do with renewable generation around the table. I'll summarize briefly, even though it's been quite a bit of discussion, we haven't talked much about the filing itself, and so I'll talk a little bit about the filing. And let just quickly give you some background from the last, how we got here, different from what Mr. Gerhardsen was talking about. On May 21st this year, the Commission approved our request for a renewable resource rider to recover costs for the first year of operation of Otter Tail's owned 40.5-megawatt portion of the Langdon Wind Facility. And as you recall, this is a 159-megawatt wind farm that's located near Langdon. Otter Tail owns just a portion of that, and we also take 19.5 megawatts from that in a power purchase agreement. The power purchase agreement is not part of this rider. That flows through our energy adjustment and is part of our cost of energy calculation. And again, forgive me if I'm duplicating this a bit, but in Otter Tail's 2005 integrated resource plan called for up to 160 megawatts of wind energy. That means that this amount of wind generation is cost-effective and a necessary part of our balanced generation portfolio. The investment in and the PPA from the Langdon Wind Project were the first steps toward meeting this goal. Earlier this year, on August 29th, Otter Tail filed its first annual update to the Renewable Resource Rider. This filing updated the cost for the Langdon Wind Project for actual data through July, added the costs and investment in a second wind project at Ashtabula, known as the Ashtabula Wind Energy Center, and credited against those costs the revenue that Otter Tail began collecting on July 1, 2008, under the rider. Our August 29th filing describes the process we used to arrive at the decision to invest in the Ashtabula Wind Project. In 2006, Otter Tail issued a request for proposals. In response to that, we received 45 proposals from 28 entities. These proposals were extensively analyzed, and this RFP became the benchmark with which to compare various wind projects. Both Langdon and Ashtabula projects compare favorably with that benchmark. The Ashtabula Wind Project consists of a total of 138 turbines, each with a nameplate rating of 1.5 megawatts, for a total of 207 megawatts. In that project, Otter Tail owns 32 turbines for a total of 48 megawatts. The ownership of the remainder of the turbines is retained by the developer, FPL Energy. The construction schedule called for Otter Tail's turbines to be in commercial operation by mid-December. In fact, all of Otter Tail's turbines were completed and went into operation in November.
That was good news.
Yes. The basic concept of the renewable resource rider in our annual filing is the same as it was in our original filing. It is designed to recover Otter Tail's revenue requirements through a rate applied to all retail energy sales. It is appropriate to apply the rate as a per kilowatt hour charge for a couple of reasons. First, wind is a non-dispatchable generation resource, which means that it cannot be used to satisfy capacity requirements. Second, because wind is a non-dispatchable resource, PPAs for wind are based on a price of for the energy generated. They do not have a capacity price component. If Otter Tail were buying this energy through a PPA, it would be part of the cost of energy adjustment, a rate per kilowatt hour. The calculation of the rate is based on the best information we had at the time of the filing. In order to be sure that we are not over-collecting or under-collecting our revenue requirement on these projects or any future projects, we have set up a tracking account. This tracking account captures all costs related to the Otter Tail-owned wind projects and credits to it the revenue received through retail sales under the rider. And, you know, obviously if that changes as a result of the rate case, we'll work out the details on that. While the basic concept has not changed, Otter Tail is recommending two modifications. The first modification relates to the timing of the cost recovery over the 25-year life of the projects. The Federal Production Tax Credit, or PTC, significantly reduces revenue requirements during the first 10 years of the project. However, at the end of 10 years, when the PTC ends, a large increase in revenue requirements occurs. And this is just a graph I think you can see very well. Here's what happens. The revenue requirement drops very quickly, and when the PTC ends, there's a step function.
And just for the record, we did provide those to the folks on the phone.
As the gentleman sitting in the room, does he have one?
Carol, do you have this? You might enjoy that.
I could get copies too. I didn't bring copies. I just thought visually, all I wanted to do was get the idea of the.
It's hard to miss, even without my glasses.
In order to minimize that rate shock after 10 years, Otter Tail is proposing to defer a portion of the PTC and spread that deferred amount over the remaining life of the project. For instance, in the first year, 10% would be deferred, and that 10% would be amortized over the remaining 24 years of the project. The second year, 20% would be deferred and spread over in the second year, 20% of the PTC would be deferred and spread over 23 years, and so on. The resulting timing of this cost recovery is a smoothing of the line, something like the pink line that you can see here. You see there's still a significant drop in revenue requirements in the first early years, but it changes the timing such that we don't get that step function in year 10. The customers will still receive the benefit of the PTC either through an actual tax credit to the tax expense or through reduced rate base from the deferred balance, just the way accumulated deferred income taxes are used to reduce rate base.
The production tax credit, I just have a question because it's come up to me recently. I wasn't sure of the answer. But my assumption is that if your project is built during the year that the production tax credit is in place, that it's good for 10 years.
That's correct.
All right. It's not just good for the 2 years and then you have to worry that you don't get it 2 years later.
No.
When your project is built, then it's good for 10 years.
If it's built before the deadline of the PTC
is set for 10 years.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
Yes. That's why there was urgency before the PTC
was extended to 2009 through the end of 2009.
Right. Mm-hmm. Of course, we never know that. And that's why we thought there was urgency to get this, the Ashtabula
in place.
Online. The second recommendation is related to some of the discussions we've been having. It wasn't in the actual annual filing. Instead, it was a recommendation that Mr. Diller made in his staff memo, and Otter Tail supports the recommendation. It does not affect the rider calculation, but only how the charge would appear on customers' bills. We request that the renewable resource adjustment amount be combined with the energy adjustment or fuel clause adjustment on customers' bills. We're not suggesting any change in the calculation of either the cost of energy and fuel clause adjustment or in the calculation of the renewable resource rider. We are suggesting that the two amounts simply be added together and shown as a single line on customers' bills. As Mr. Diller correctly noted in his memo, the amount appearing separately is not meaningful, and it is, in fact, misleading. That's because the benefits of having this energy on Otter Tail's system to serve our retail customers is reflected in the energy adjustment, while the cost is recovered through the renewable resource rider. I'll talk a little bit more about that. There are three primary reasons why the cost of renewable generation should be combined with the energy adjustment for billing purposes. The first is that if Otter Tail had purchased the energy under from these renewable generators under a power purchase agreement, those costs would in fact be included in the cost of energy and the energy adjustment. Whether a wind developer or Otter Tail owns the generators doesn't change the characteristics of the energy being produced and delivered to customers. Second, in any given time period, Otter Tail needs a certain amount of energy to serve its retail customers. At times when our own generation is not sufficient to meet those needs of our retail customers, we purchase energy from the MISO energy market. The addition of the wind energy on our system reduces the need to purchase energy from the market. Our budget projections for 2009 estimate that the market price for energy will be, on average, higher than the cost of our renewable generation. We took a look at our 2008 cost of energy. When we replaced the megawatt hours produced by Otter Tail's owned wind generation with market purchases, in other words, we know once Langdon was online, which was fully online, I believe, in March. So March through November, we took a look at our cost of energy. We knew how many kilowatt hours and megawatt hours was produced by the wind, by Langdon Wind Farm. If we had had to buy that in the market, and we knew what our average purchase was, because we still make some purchases on some hours, so we took our average purchase price. We replaced that renewable generation with the purchases, and we found that the average cost of energy for the year, for those months, total months, would have been, on average, nearly 0.3 cents higher.
Would that have been to purchase renewable energy or energy that is...
just energy from the MISO market.
Just at whatever, energy, period.
Yeah, at whatever the LMP price was.
Whatever, and whatever was available at that time.
Right, right. Remind that the renewable energy renewable resource rider rate during that same period of time was about 0.2, just under 0.2 cents.
What's that? I guess these are questions that relate to wind as a fuel and whether you had it available when you needed the capacity.
That's true. There are hours when we had to buy because it wasn't available. But, you know, that is true. This is averages, simple averages, over a month or a year at a time. But you're right, it's non-dispatchable, so we can't use it for capacity, to meet our capacity mm-hmm. needs.
Mm-hmm.
And then let me mention the third reason that we want to combine these on the bill, and that's what Mr. Gerritsen was talking about somewhat. And I think this is probably the more compelling reason. And it has to do with the way we calculate our monthly cost of energy. The calculation totals all of our fuel and all of our purchased energy costs and divides that total by the total megawatt hours generated and purchased to arrive at a cost per megawatt hour. As you know, the examples of the cost would be coal and natural gas used to generate electricity and the cost of any purchases, including energy purchased under power purchase agreements. In the case of the wind generation that we own, however, no cost is included in the numerator of the cost of energy calculation. That's what we were talking about mm-hmm. before. But the generated kilowatt hours is in the denominator. So it reduces the cost of energy rate.
the cost is actually in the renewable resource adjustment. This is why we think that showing the renewable resource adjustment separately from the energy adjustment is not helpful information for customers. The renewable resource adjustment is only part of the story. It leads customers to think that renewable energy is increasing their bills, while when considered together with the cost of energy adjustment and the reduced need to purchase energy on the spot market, it has, on average, decreased customers' bills and is expected to do so in 2009.
Well, isn't it true, though, that any energy purchase these days, when you're making the capital, with the capital investments that you're at, we're going to be needing to show people that their bills are going to be increasing. I don't care whether you're building wind power or you're building coal power plants or you're building gas-fired electricity, you know, all of those are going to cause an increase in customers' bills because the cost for the new investments are higher than what you've had in your present investments that were made, let's say, 20 years ago and are paid off by customers. So it's a little hard for me to say, hear you say, well, this is really saving customers money. It's not. It may cost them less, but it's still going to be an increase for you to purchase and build power plants these days. Even if you buy power off the market, it's reflective of the cost of increased cost for investment that would need to be made for, you know, the capital costs that need to go into these investments as well as the energy.
But you're just asking for a more fairer representation of the cost of renewable versus traditional, which is warped by the fact that there's not this, that the whole calculation isn't included.
That's exactly right. But the other one, answer to your question too, is we're saying that it's not necessarily going to reduce bills over what they were 5 years ago. What we're saying is if we have to go out and buy this in the market, it will cost more than, in this case, the renewable generation that we own on average. And again, you have to remember this is averages. Customers, you know, individual customers' bills may be different. Any given hour is different. Any given month is different. Mm-hmm. But we looked at an average over a period of 10 months and are saying that it's because the market price reflects all those capital investments, mm-hmm. too,
right.
as you say.
Sure, right.
So we're just saying.
So it's what you're telling us is that if you went out into the open market and you bought this electricity, it would cost customers more than if you build this plant yourself and own it and produce an energy yourself. And therefore, there is a savings, but it's an increase in cost to them either way.
Increase in cost over, you know, you have to have a benchmark.
Well, let's say 5 years ago.
Well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or even probably a year ago, you know, there may be an increase in cost.
I think I would disagree with a year ago because a year ago the spot market was fairly high. We didn't have this wind available. When the wind came in that we own, as we said, it's lower than the average spot market price.
So you're saying that if your power plant had gone out in November and December last year, you had this wind resource, you wouldn't have needed to purchase as much on the spot market
That's
last year
true.
At high
we
cost.
Would not have. We would not have.
Of course, we see
as
how
much.
Strong the wind blows when it's 50
today.
Below zero.
But it was a real interesting graphic that Mr. Sinsland was showing us here that during the blizzard this last mm-hmm. week, we had some tremendous
wind. Yes, we did, 35 to 40 mile an hour.
Yeah, it didn't reach the cap. There is a cap beyond mm-hmm. which mm-hmm. the wind, you know, can't.
So it was still generating electricity from
a lot of the load shape was really interesting. Production shape mm-hmm. was very
really
interesting
was.
And very mm-hmm. steady. During that period of time,
mm-hmm.
yeah, it was a good time for wind.
Do you have other concepts you'd like to share with the commission? I think we've got a pretty good handle on this now.
I'm just to recap slightly, and that is saying that in our annual filing, we've updated the costs and the projected costs for both Langdon and Ashtabula, and we're requesting a 0.51 cent per kilowatt hour rate. And as you mentioned, for 750 kilowatt hours. That would be a charge to customers of $3.82. But as I discussed, mm-hmm. it's generally offset. And again, I can't say every customer is going to see an exact offset, but over a period of time, it's usually offset by the increased kilowatt-hours available that and the reduction in the fuel clause rate.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing I was going to mention, let's see, just about finished. We continue to evaluate how much wind we can put on our system cost-effectively. The wind that we have on our system today, we believe, was the best economic choice for Otter Tail's North Dakota customers. It reduces the customer's energy costs. It also satisfies the clear direction given by the North Dakota legislature to consider these kinds of investments in the state of North Dakota as reflected by the state tax credits, the 10% renewable objective, and the statutory presumption of prudence.
Let me ask about that statutory presumption of prudence. Does that, and maybe my lawyers can answer this as well, but is that presumption of prudence, does that apply to all prudence or just to advanced determination of prudence?
So, for example, in this case where these people say they want us to examine the prudence of the case.
I'll speak to that. My understanding is that if you cite a facility in the state of North Dakota, you have the you have met your burden, and it is an opponent's burden to overcome. It doesn't only apply, if I recall the statute correctly, sure, to advance determination proceedings. That
it would seem peculiar if it did, but weirder things happen because this was all developed in the context of the advanced determination.
So does Mr. Shadeen understand that concept then?
Well, we understand that the Langdon farm has been reviewed, but the Ashtabula farm, which only started up recently, hasn't been reviewed, and I guess we want to have a crack at that in the rate case.
I understand that, but what the concept here is that we're trying to make sure that you understand as you move forward with this, is that North Dakota law, I'm not going to quote
it
North Dakota law, but
it presumes prudence. of energy conversion facilities built in the state of North Dakota, therefore putting the burden of proof on any opponent or the commission to disprove.
Or on any applicant. So instead of the company having to prove prudence, you would need to prove, have the burden of proof on this matter.
Well, I think if that's what the law says, that's what the law says, and I'm an engineer. We have Mr. Hendricks on the line, but I do want to say that certainly doesn't presume that the way you calculate the cost for flowing through the deferred income taxes and the benefits and the way it's structured with the fuel clause and all these other things
for sure
are set out forth in advance.
That's
correct.
You're right.
Yes.
Alana
Jeffco-Sacco.
The presumption is in a section of the law entitled Advanced Determination of Prudence. Write down the section number 490516 for your attorney.
And Mr. Hendricks, you're still there, aren't you, Jake?
Yep, I'm here.
All right,
so
Jake is taking that all down.
Rich and I, we understand the whole concept that the burden is on us to prove the project.
The question is, does it only apply to advanced determinations of prudence, and if so, what is such a thing? There is no statute in North Dakota, general statute, about presumptions for projects in the state. It is in a section entitled Advanced Determination of Prudence, which may or may not limit it to advanced determinations of prudence, and we don't have a definition of those.
And because we're not in a situation anymore of advanced determination of prudence because the project's already been built.
Well, I was trying to get a simple answer to that a few minutes ago in that corner over there, but it says a public utility, it doesn't define it, it says a public utility proposing to construct, lease, or make improvements to an energy conversion facility, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Also improvements do, but that still is anticipated.
It is anticipated, and as one of the drafters of this settlement-derived statute,
yes.
I have no idea what it was supposed to mean.
If I may, we did actually cross this issue in Langdon. The question was, could you resolve to determine make an advanced determination of prudence, because, of course, by the time we got to you, Langdon was built.
Mm-hmm. And I asked that question.
And the result, and we had an exchange on the issue, and as I understand the commission's determination, the answer was yes. And it was for very good reason. It was essentially because, obviously, the legislative, our belief was the legislative intent, but also it was the intent of the statute to remove risk as soon as possible, and that's how.
Well, and I thought also it was because staff had you had visited with staff about that project really early on,
like a year before
you had done this, and so that's why that one the commission recognized that those discussions with staff had happened, and a letter had gone out from staff on that particular wind farm. So I don't know that decision binds the commission on all future wind farms that are proposed here on that particular issue, because there are differences, of course, in every case. Mm-hmm. Commissioner Kramer, you had something.
I have a couple of other questions. One for Bernadine, and maybe you answered this, and I wasn't paying close enough attention. But I understand the comparison between the market and owned generation. Has there been a good comparison on costs between the 19.5 megawatts that you have a PPA with the developer and the 48 megawatts that are on the same farm, and how that shakes out?
If you don't mind, Commissioner Kramer, I'll respond to that. We did actually have that same question when we came back in, and at that time I remember the answer being that it was a 10%. Delta. Okay. And that was the way we were able to do that without divulging a trade secret concern. I think that's a fair answer today.
Okay. Then my other question is more operational. Bernadine, I guess you'd mentioned about your capacity on your system for all this wind. Are you having to ramp back or ramp down any of your base load to make room for the new wind? Especially, I'm thinking of North Dakota, coal plant. Do you know?
I don't know the answer to that. I know we haven't had to curtail the wind at this point.
Sure. Okay.
But ramping down base load.
Well, generally, you don't curtail wind, do you? Because that's your zero cost.
True.
For fuel cost.
From a transmission aspect.
I see. Mm-hmm. Okay. Commissioner Clark, do you have any follow-up questions at this time? All right. Do we want to address at this time whether we think a hearing is necessary in this particular case before we move forward, or do we want to address that at a work session that the commission may need to hold on this? On procedural matters still. The only reason I would wonder whether we have to hold a hearing is because we had this man who requested one verbally over the phone. We put out this notice, opportunity for hearing. We say if anyone wants a hearing, they need to get back to the commission by such a date. This person called in and said, I would like to have a hearing. The commission is holding an informal hearing today, but that's, I'm wondering whether we have, could even for that person hold another informal hearing, whether it might be a good idea to hold one more informal hearing, not a regular hearing, on this matter to allow that person to participate if they wish by phone. And then perhaps other people who've been listening in today might have some information they'd like to share with the commission besides Otter Tail at that informal hearing. It could be the industrial group participants, it could be Mr. Carroll, it could be this person who had asked, and then we would perhaps have an opportunity to then have addressed that someone asked for a hearing, and I think if we just put out through the commission's, I'm not sure exactly how we could do this, but we could announce in some way what the date of that would be, put it out on our next calendar of meetings, and then we would be able to move ahead with that and probably make a rather quick decision after that if things went right.
This is Mike Diller from staff. Would the commission – see, I've taken a number of these customer complaints myself because maybe Tom was busy or mm-hmm. whatever, and I've crossed this bridge at least twice that I can remember, and the misunderstanding is – how come we have to pay more for these facilities if they're such a great deal? And when I'm done talking to them, explaining that, yes, you're paying more on the rider, but you're paying less in the fuel cost. Oh, is that how it works? Okay, well, we thought maybe we were going to be charged twice or something. Mm-hmm. And so my suggestion is to call Mr. Bain back and find out, you know, at first just engage him in a little conversation and make sure that he understands that, and then ask him, you know, if he's still interested in having a hearing. I would hate to think that we'd have hearings because somebody calls in and says, I want to have a hearing, and it's not followed up with any kind of a, you know, a request or written, or it's supposed to be in writing, as counsel whispers across the table. So this procedural stuff is frustrating to me and a little beyond me, but that's the way I would do it if I was.
I think it's important to remember that all the notice requirements were done properly. It's just the confusion was with regard to extra notification, not notice, as opposed to legal notice. Am I?
That's correct. We had legal notice.
Almost? Well, you know.
It's pretty close.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Because this January 1 thing isn't insignificant, it doesn't seem to me.
I think the procedural issue that's the most important, because the hearing request is supposed to be in writing, and they're supposed to explain their reasons. And so Mike's idea of engaging the gentleman and finding out the reasons and suggesting it in writing, if there any remain, is a good one, I think. But the biggest procedural question is whether these other parties do want an opportunity to intervene.
If you wanted to do it really hard, you could.
The deadline is the hearing date. If you don't have a hearing date, you don't really have that deadline that in our rules. And this conversation may prompt them to do some thinking and deciding if they want to be a party in this case, whatever happens with it later. I think we need to give them that much of an opportunity.
So what opportunity are you suggesting, Alana? What would be the next step? The next step would be
asking
to...
asking them how much time they need to make that decision, maybe?
Yeah, I got
to
go.
Mm-hmm. So we would first engage the people on the phone who's expressed an interest in the case. We would ask legal to do that. All right? And then to share with them what the issues are and explain the issues to them and to see whether they feel they need to have an opportunity then beyond what the commission is anticipating of moving this in some way into the next rate case. Is that right?
May I ask for a clarification? I think the only people on the phone are the ones with which we have an agreement.
Well, assuming that they characterize the agreement the same as you, and I think there's... Larry or Craig or Larry or Jake, are you? Maybe you could just restate your understanding now after hearing all of this.
Well, we are concerned that the members and started calling me and saying, "What is this? What's happening here?" It's an increase from 2 mills to 5 mills on January 1. That's 160% increase, and we want to have some way to challenge this or look into it or whatever. So that prompted our writing this letter and putting it in on Monday. And then following that, Mr. Sabico talked to Mr. Gerhardsen and said, well, okay, if we get a chance to go in at and question all aspects of this through a rate case, we would be okay with having the rider go into effect on January 1 as planned, but it would not be subject to refund like the interim rates. Now, that was done without reaching an agreement, as Commissioner Weifold said, with your advocacy staff.
Mm-hmm.
So I realized that was just an agreement between the industrials and Mr. Gerhardsen.
Sure.
So I can't tell you what validity that has, but that was the principle that we understood going into the meeting today. And we question a lot of the points that Ms. Brutlag brought up that we'd like to challenge them in a future meeting.
Okay.
All right.
The only, and unfortunately Mr. Salvicul isn't there, I was under the impression that it would just be just two separate cases that could be in the end sort of, my thought was they're going to be tracked together. That's the only difference I think we're hearing, and I thought that was clear. I haven't thought about whether it makes that much difference. It probably doesn't, but I think for the moment if one was to continue with the rider, it helps to have a separate proceeding to continue. I don't want to say continue with the rider. I think everybody anticipates the rider would continue. It's just that if the current costs would stay in the rider or go into the case,
I don't think that would be a showstopper. Jake, you could maybe comment on this. I think it would be up to the commission, too, to decide whether it's best to combine the cases or to keep them going concurrently.
We'll also ask Mr. Carroll if he has any comments as well. But first we'll go to, did someone else on the phone wish to comment?
I would just reiterate what Mr. Shadeen said.
And your name is again?
I'm Jake.
Thank you, Jake Hendricks, right? Thank you. Okay, and then Mr. Carroll, or Carroll Dewing, excuse me.
No, my concerns are one that Commissioner Kramer, I'd be interested in the answer to the question as far as if any of the baseload stations are being backed down at this time and what effect that's having on the rates with the wind coming in. Is there any connection with this whatsoever with anything taking place in Minnesota and how that affects back to, in his case, the amount of wind that comes in and just generally how the wind costs are affecting the overall cost of the ratepayers in North Dakota. Okay. All that is very critical.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. All right. Okay, so I had one thought that we would maybe hold another informal. It doesn't sound like that's Mr. Diller doesn't think that that's necessary at this time until we've talked to the other person who's talked to Tom.
Sure.
And so we won't make any commitment at this time to doing that until we hear back from staff.
Well, if it's going to be heard with the rate case, can't we just tell people there's your chance to come and show up and ask a question then?
That may be, but I do think, you know, Susan's point about calling the gentleman back and having a discussion with him would be helpful.
There would be a preliminary decision at least made at this point by the commission before it's heard again with the issues with the rate case.
That's right.
So.
The only thing here is time.
That's what I keep thinking.
Time
about.
Is really pretty critical. The large amounts of money, as Bruce used, piling up, or someone said piling up to recover later. It'd be if maybe we could.
We shouldn't have had them start this wind farm in November. We should have told them, hold off until January 1.
Wouldn't that be the pitch?
I'm going to be like Tom. I'm going to be like Tom and just blurt something out here. And can
unlike you.
Can we get some direction that's to the effect of write up an order to put the new rider into effect January 1 if Mr. Baim ends up not really wanting to have a hearing and that prudency will be determined in the rate case so that everyone can have a crack at that.
Well, I think my your point is right on. I don't see a day between now and December 31st to have a work session, much less another hearing. I mean, that's just those are just the facts we're dealing with. So if in fact, we're going to want to move forward with it, you know.
Well, I think it's a little, I would feel awkward making a determination today as a commission before I've had a chance to check with someone, because otherwise that person could say, well, the commission already made up their mind even before I had a chance to be talked to about this. So I think this is too early today to do this. And the commission does have a commissioner has the opportunity to talk with staff about how to proceed. And then you can pass out a draft order later if there is a need for one, all right? So.
And I think just to be thinking about the people that have called us, one person asked, but there's all these other people out there that
we're concerned as
well. I mean, just something to think about at least.
All right, thank you. And so I don't think we're able to give direction to staff yet at this time. All right, and so with that, then, unless there's anyone else, anyone else who wishes to say something before we close today?
On behalf of the interveners, I just want to thank you very much for allowing us to be here today. Thank you.
No, I'm happy that you participated. Thank you. That's our pleasure, and that's what we need is more people to get interested in these cases.
Absolutely.
Thank you. And so with that, we will close the informal hearing on case number PU08742.